Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 57, Zoology, Part 4. We've seen the very great challenge that we have if we are going to try to teach the subject of zoology and subsequently all of the other natural sciences in the spirit in which Steiner intended them to be taught. And I assure you that much of what you probably have already learned about this subject, or much of what you will hear about it, perhaps even from your mentor and other colleagues who have done it, ignores Steiner's real picture, or works with it in a very superficial way, not understanding why Steiner creates such a deep relationship between the animal and the human being. When we get to botany, that's much more the plant and the earth, and in a certain way it's easier for us to make that subject harmonize with, you know, conventionally progressive ideas about our relationship to the earth and our responsibility for the earth. Get to grade 6, mineralogy, and there you're faced with the issue of time. How long ago did this or that happen? How old is the earth? What about all of those geological periods and plate tectonics? Do we teach that? Is that fitting into Steiner's cosmology? There you've got a whole other set of issues and so on. And when you get into physiology, I can only say, just talk about the heart, whether it's a pump or not, and you're facing a huge controversy there as well. So this is only the beginning. You can miss all of these controversies by doing all of this in as bland and factual a way as possible, giving the children information and delightful stories and so on, and call that zoology, but it won't be the real thing. The more that you try to wrestle with Steiner's pictures yourself, the better, the more vivid, and the more meaningful it will be for the children. You're not giving them anthroposophy, but you yourself have to really imbue yourself with the spirit of Steiner's pictures. So here's an effort that I made. I'll give you a couple of approaches to taking up this idea of the relationship of the animal and the human being. One of them involves skipping forward a year and drawing on a myth that belongs to the Greeks, who are, of course, in the curriculum meant to be taught in grade 5. But I pulled one out of Greek mythology and brought it to the children and told them we'll hear more about these figures and gods and goddesses in grade 5. But that at the very beginning of the earth, that the great Greek god Zeus gave the responsibility to two titans who were very powerful figures, whom Zeus and his brothers had overcome and conquered, much in the way that the Aesir had conquered Ymir and the other giants and Jotuns. So Epimetheus and Prometheus. Epimetheus means one who looks back. Prometheus is one who looks forward. They were given the task of bringing into the world new creations, populating this world. And Zeus gave them a kind of treasure trove, a box filled with wonderful, wonderful qualities. Here was a pair of eyes that could see great distances with tremendous accuracy. Here was a pair of strong legs, even four of these strong legs together, that could allow a creature to run and run and run and never tire. Here was a very, very powerful set of lungs that could fill up with air and allow a creature to float above the earth for long periods of time. Now, Epimetheus, who had the responsibility to get started, he immediately took the very best pairs of eyes, the very best limbs, the very best hearts and lungs, and immediately put them into these creatures of clay and created one remarkable creature after another. Very, very impressive. Creatures of great speed, creatures of great stealth, creatures of tremendously fearsome noise, and creatures of tremendously helpful silence, and so on and so on. By the time Prometheus was called in to work on his creatures, all of the very best qualities, the best eyes, the best ears, the best noses and tongues and everything, they were all gone. All that was left was the second and third best eyes and the fourth strongest limbs and the third biggest heart and on and on and on. And Prometheus realized that he'd have to work with this. As we would say today, he had to make lemonade out of lemons. And so he created creatures who had nothing that was very best. They had everything that was second or third, even fourth best. Nothing within them, not one single thing within these creatures, was most powerful, was most accurate, was most compelling. Instead, these were creatures who would have to learn to work with the second and third best qualities, but to make them work together. And sometimes they would realize, well, we're not strong enough to lift that heavy weight. We have to create something like a tool to help us lift it. Or we are not going to be able to live in this cold, cold place because we don't have thick feathers and wonderfully warm fur like the creatures around us. But we may have to create fire, draw upon fire so that we can live. Who were these second, third, fourth, fifth best creatures? Who do you think they were, fourth graders? Good guess. Human beings. Us. They are us. And in this block, we are now going to learn about the creatures of Epimetheus. We're going to learn to whom he gave the best eyes, the strongest heart, the most powerful lungs, the thickest fur, and the most beautiful feathers, and on and on and on. These creatures are, of course, fourth graders. Whom do you think? The animals. Exactly. And we're going to see how it is, how the animals live and breathe and eat and even play with their exceptionally wonderful, very best qualities, and compare them sometimes to ourselves and see how we manage to get by without having anything that's quite so perfect. Okay, so that's how I would, one way, I'm not saying do it that way, but this is one way of bringing in this idea. And I would say this can serve as a bit of a pedagogical story too, because as I've said earlier, this is a time, fourth grade, where the children are becoming very aware not only of themselves, not only of the world around, but of the separation of themselves and the world around, and the separation of themselves from others in the class. And the children are starting to do a lot of comparing. You're the strongest, but you're the fastest. You're the best artist, but you really knit really well, or at this age, sew or do cross-stitch really well. A lot of comparing. a lot of grading is going on, even if you refrain from doing that. And so it is that in a story like this, the children start to get a sense that it's not only the matter of, as it were, you know, who began the race, but where you are at the end, what you make of what you have been given, and that perhaps there is a great wisdom in some of the disabilities that we have, some of the mediocre parts of our nature, some things that we can improve with work. Whereas in a way, an animal from day one has an endowment, and that's incredible, but it's also as far as it will go. Not a bad thing for a fourth grader to be thinking about and to be an underlying theme of their work in this block. So to try to bring this comparison about in this way, and then if you look at the slideshow on the zoology block that is part of this conference, you'll see that on the title page, which is of course always done at the end of the block rather than the beginning, but there is a drawing there which is similar to one that I put on the board. And I, in turn, did not create this, but drew upon Rudolf Steiner's inspiration for it. We see there what are often called the four beasts of the Ezekiel, or sometimes the four beasts of the apocalypse. These are very, very lofty spiritual beings who represent the group souls of the animals. And I've spoken already about the importance of the group soul experience for the fourth grader. So we see there the eagle, the bull, or rather in order, the eagle at the top, the lion next, the bull, and then woven together with them, the man, the human being, who is represented as, we could say, one of the beasts or one of the group souls of these four beings. The eagle, who is seen here in connection with the sensory organs of the human being, the forehead, the eyes in particular. The lion, who is seen also in the head, but in the center part of the head, where we have our nose, where we have the cavities of our sinuses, where we have this open space, where the rhythmic system, the breathing system, lives very strongly, so that we associate the lion then with the rhythmic system of the human being. And then we see the bull in the realm of the mouth and the jaw, where we chew, as the ungulates do. So this is a way that Steiner helped us visualize this wonderful threefold connection of the human being and the animal world. And it's, again, a good picture that we could carry with us about what we are bringing to the children, how we are partly like a condensation of the entire animal world, or we might say that what we carry in a very compacted way is contrarywise spread out throughout the animal world, that we carry a kind of microcosmic quality, which in the animal world is spread out macrocosmically. And in the next lecture, I'll give you another approach to bringing this. Once again, not to say, this is the way you should do it, but just to show you that there can be inventiveness, there can be a number of perspectives of helping children understand this very basic aspect of fourth grade zoology.